Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Healthcare. It is February 19th, and we have a room full, so I want to make sure that we at least get, we're going to hear the first bill, 4019A. So I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 4019A. And Cassie?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4019A designates the second week in April as Organ, Eye, and Tissue Donor Appreciation Week. The measure establishes the Organ Gifts of Life Award for families of organ donors and authorizes organ procurement organizations to nominate and select individuals to receive the award. The measure grants the Office of the Governor the ability to present the award to families, and the bill declares an emergency effective on passage. The fiscal is minimal, the revenue is no impact, and the House floor was 58-0 with two excused.
Okay, Leslie Brock, Don Klosterman, and
Rep. Fahey and Jared.
Let's have Representative Fahey and Jared, is it Dorner, come first. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee. I'm Julie Fahey, the state representative from House District 14, which is West Eugene and Junction City. And I'm proud today to bring you House Bill 4019A, which was introduced as a House Healthcare Committee bill this session. This bill came at the request of a constituent from my district, Jared Dorner, who some of you met with last month during when he visited the Capitol with his family. Jared is the recipient of a heart transplant that was possible because of the generosity of someone who he had never met, who chose to be an organ donor after their death. The bill we've drafted does two things. First, it establishes the second week of April each year as Organ, Eye, and Tissue Donor Appreciation Week in Oregon. April is currently National Donate Life Month, and this year, Blue and Green Day, where the public wears blue and green to show their support of organ donors, is in the second week of April. Second, the bill creates the Gifts of Life Award, which will be presented annually by the governor to families of organ donors from the preceding year. The award nomination process has an education and advocacy organization like Donate Life Northwest nominate families, and then the Organ Bank, or Organ Procurement Organization, would make the final selections to send to the governor. While Jared came before me because I'm his state representative, this issue is a personal one for me and my family. 3 years ago this month, my cousin Steve Slaubaugh died of cystic fibrosis while waiting for a lung transplant. He was number one on the transplant list in Iowa when he died. So just one additional donor could have made the difference for him and for my family. We hope that this bill will bring additional awareness to the issue of organ donation and will inspire more Oregonians to become donors. I'd like to thank OHSU and Donate Life Northwest for their support of this bill and to thank the committee for your consideration. And I'll turn it over to Jared now.
Thank you. Okay. Chair Monis Anderson and the members of the Senate Health Care Committee. For the record, my name is Jared Dorner. I am 16 years old and I'm a junior at Willamette High School in Eugene. I'm a Boy Scout in Troop 22 in West Eugene, and I'm working towards my Eagle's rank. One of the things I have to do in order to make Eagle Scout is to do a community service project. I want to thank my state representative, Julie Fahey, for working with me to introduce House Bill 4019. House Bill 4019 will declare the second week of April Organ, Eye, and Tissue Donor Appreciation Week each year and direct the governor to present a Gifts of Life Award to selected families of organ, eye, and tissue donors. In May of 2014, I got very sick and needed a heart transplant. After nearly 2 months in the hospital, I received a heart transplant. I was very lucky that they were able to find a donor that for me. When I got sick, the doctors told my parents that the process could take 12 to 24 months. In all, I spent about 5 months away from home between living in the hospital and outpatient care. The whole time I was sick, my mom was right by my side. My mom talked about the fact that someone had to die for me to get their heart. When this person died, they gave me the gift of life. We found out the donor that saved me also helped six other people. I'm here today because someone made the choice to become a donor and to help others after their passing. Because of my personal connection to organ donation, I wanted to combine my Eagle Project with efforts to promote organ, eye, and tissue donor awareness. In the future, I'm interested in pursuing other improvements like improving how the DMV registers Oregonians as anatomical donors and having a more complete approach to educating high school students about the values and importance of being an organ donor. By passing House Bill 4019, we will raise a statewide awareness of the need for organ donation. My hope is that everyone in Oregon will become an organ donor and help fulfill the needs of everyone in need of a transplant. Please support House Bill 4019, and I will be happy to respond to any questions you might have. And also part of my ego project, may I please get your autographs?
Easy one for us.
Easy. You got a page for us, we'll pass it along the dais.
And Representative Fahey and Jared, thanks so much for coming. It really is an important bill. And are there any questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I will call up Leslie Brock and Don Klosterman.
I got it.
I was trying to testify.
Okay, that's fine. Sabrina Riggs and Nikki Terzieff.
Good afternoon, Chair Mona Sanderson and members of the committee. My name is Leslie Brock. I'm Executive Director at Donate Life Northwest, and I'm here to testify on behalf of House Bill 4019 to establish the second week of April as Organ, Eye, and Tissue Donor Appreciation Week. As the sole anatomical donation agency, education agency in Oregon, Donate Life Northwest has the responsibility to broadly and adequately educate the public about the importance of donation and transplantation so that all Oregonians can make an informed decision when they go to make that decision to register as a donor. We work on behalf of the local organ, eye, and tissue procurement organizations, as well as the transplant centers at Legacy, OHSU, and the VA, to grow the donor registry for the state and to ultimately save more lives. We also work on behalf of transplant recipients like Jared, whose lives have been saved by transplant. House Bill 4019 would establish a permanent and inspiring remembrance and a thank you to organ, eye, and tissue donors throughout the state of Oregon. Every April, a similar event like this occurs in Washington State in the capital of Olympia, and donor families are invited to attend a ceremony with the governor honoring all organ donors from the state of Washington. It is called the Gift of Life Award. The event is hosted by Life Center Northwest, which is our counterpart up in Washington, and includes a gathering of families in a beautiful setting with all the dignity afforded by this personal thank you from the governor. The event includes a short program, and thanks from the donation agencies precedes a speech by the governor where he acknowledges the gifts these people have made and the lives that have been saved. Then each donor is given a certificate or an award on behalf of their loved ones, and along with a long-stemmed rose. Donor families are always so proud to be in the presence of the governor and so moved that he would take this time to acknowledge their life-saving gifts. Each year, hundreds of Oregonians' lives are saved by donation and transplant, and I urge you to support House Bill 4019. Passage will empower our fellow Oregonians to make a big difference in the lives of those who are waiting for transplants and honor those who made the ultimate gift of life through donation. Thank you so much for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Sabrina.
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sabrina Riggs, here on behalf of the Oregon Academy of Ophthalmology in support of House Bill 4019A. The OAO is a professional association of eye physicians and surgeons who specialize in the medical and surgical treatment of eye disorders and other conditions, and they also provide vision care services. We have about 170 active members, which encompasses about 80% of the profession in Oregon. Thanks for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill today. As an association of eye health specialists, many of which perform corneal transplants, the OAO can attest to how important it is to have a robust organ donation pool. Our physicians have seen firsthand the difference a corneal transplant can make. Quite literally, it does give the patient a new view on life. Transplants are performed to restore diseased or scarred eye vision, or when eye pain is so great that medication alone is no longer a viable treatment. The National Institute of Eye Health estimates that there are roughly 33,000 corneal transplants each year, and they're quite successful with a failure rate of less than 10%. Finally, I'd like to close by thanking Representative Fahey and Jared Dorner for bringing forward this important bill. We respectfully urge your eye vote, and I can answer questions if there are any.
Nikki?
Thank you. Excuse me.
Thank you. Chair Moss Anderson, members of the committee, Nikki Terziev on behalf of the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association. We represent the nearly 900 licensees who are providing comprehensive eye exams around the state. Those exams can determine the kinds of disease that will sometimes then require the donation of these types of tissues, including cancer, diabetes, and other health ailments. So we also, in some of an unprecedented partnership here with the Academy of Ophthalmology in support of House Bill 4019. And thank you to Representative Fahey and all of you for the support of this bill.
Are there questions for this panel? Thank you very much. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4019A and open a work session on House Bill 4019A.
Chair Monis Anderson, I move HB 4019A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator DeBoer moves House Bill 4019A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Byer.
Yes.
Senator Knope.
Aye.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Aye.
Vice Chair DeBoer.
Aye.
Chair Monis Anderson.
Aye. Motion carries, and Senator Manning will carry the bill and will close the work session on Senate Bill 4019 and open a public hearing on HJR 203A. And colleagues, there's a lot of interest. Please come forward, Senator and Representative. There's a high number of people who want to testify. So I'm not going to put limits on a couple of the panels, but after that, those who have signed up are limited to 2 minutes, okay, because I want to hear from everyone. All right. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Senator Monis Anderson, and members of the committee. My name is Mitch Greenlick. I represent House District 33, Northwest Portland in Washington County. I'm very happy to be here for this hearing. I really appreciate you hearing this on this measure today. This measure has a long history. It goes back to 1987. We're at the inaugural ball of Governor Neil Goldsmith. The governor stopped me on the dance floor. He didn't want to dance with me, but he didn't want to talk to me about a commission he was going to start on health care for the uninsured. He did name that commission. I was named to it. We worked on 6 to 9 months on the bill. I'm not quite sure. I mean, on the idea. And we came up with what became known as the Oregon Health Plan. That bill had 3 components. It had the formation of a high-risk pool. It had the redefinition of Medicaid. And it had a small business mandate for health insurance. The idea was handed over to the Senate, the president of the Senate, a guy named John Kitzhaber, who you may remember. And he improved the bill, passed 3 bills out of the Senate, including Senate Bill 27, which created the Oregon Health Plan, and including such issues as the prioritized list. The commission also put in the idea that Oregon needed to move towards universal access to health care and put in the statute, I think it was SB 27, the idea that health care was a right and that the state had an obligation to move toward universal access. The health plan began the mandatory, the small business insurance mandate was set aside in the next legislative session, but the high-risk pool and the Medicaid reform went forward. The uninsured rate at the time of that commission was about 20%. As the Oregon Health Plan got implemented, the uninsured rate dropped to about 14% by mid-1990s, and it was going well until we hit an economic bump. And in my first session here in 2003, the House Committee on Health and Human Services at that time created the hospital assessment as a way to continue to push the movement toward universal access forward. by the end of the 2000, the uninsured rate had dropped to about 12%. With the help of the federal government, who became our partner, we were able to move forward in the 2009 and 2011 session. Much of the work to that point was done by two people who became senators, Ben Westlin and Alan Bates, and moved that the whole process forward to adding the CCO innovations, the Medicaid expansion, and a variety of other things. And we moved the uninsured rate down to under 5% where we are now. It's clear that we have a problem with that, and that's the federal government, who's been a very strong partner, is not necessarily going to continue to be that strong a partner. There's an attempt, at least in the House, to begin to look at entitlement programs, which mean Medicare and Medicaid, and threaten our ability to move on our own toward universal access to health care. I've put together a work group to deal with what it is we need to know if we were going to seriously address the movement, further movement toward universal health care in the 2019 session. But what would be very helpful for us to know is the extent to which the citizens of our state believe health care as a right, and that the state is obligated to move forward in continuing its drive toward universal access. HJR 203 would put before the Oregon voters in the November 18 election the question, is health care a fundamental right of the citizens, and should the state be moving toward assuring access to cost-effective, medically appropriate health care services? I commend the bill to your mercies.
Thank you. Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and fellow senators, my fellow senators. This is something that I've
Introduce
thought about
yourself.
For a long time. I'm Senator Rod Monroe, District 24, mid-Multnomah County and northern Clackamas County. This is an issue that I've thought about for a long time. My mother, during the last 9 years of her life, moved to British Columbia to marry my uncle, and I used to go and visit her a lot. She had some health problems, including, in the end, pretty severe heart problems, and yet everything was taken care of. She even had a household nurse that came out two times a week to just help her with laundry and dishes and things like that. Never got a bill for anything. She was hospitalized on a couple of occasions in Prince George, and again, no cost at all. And I noted that this is not unusual. This is most countries, almost all countries, really provide for universal health care, but not the United States. And we've done a better job in Oregon, as Representative Greenlick said, of implementing the federal Obamacare law and providing health care for now over 95% of Oregonians. That's a strong step in the right direction, but there are still some Oregonians, you know, without health care, and there are still tremendous costs. One of the things that I've learned when studying health care is that the number one cause of bankruptcy in this nation is health care. People go bankrupt because of their health care bills, more often than any other cause. So that really troubles me a lot. And I've known some people that went to bankruptcy because of the expenses that they had to pay. So I would just urge you to put this measure on the ballot in November of 2018 and ask the voters of Oregon whether or not they think it's an obligation of the state to ensure that every resident has the access to cost-effective, medically appropriate, and affordable health care as a fundamental right. because that's what it ought to be. That's what it is across most of the rest of the world, and it ought to be that way here too. We need to move forward on this. Instead, sometimes it feels like the federal government in the last year has been trying to slide back the opposite direction. So I would urge your approval of House Joint Resolution 203.
Is there questions for this panel? Yeah, Senator Steiner Hayward.
I want to just clarify one thing. One of the challenges that we face is defining who the state is. When it says the state has this responsibility, I want to be clear. From my perspective, as one of the co-chief sponsors of this bill, that meant the state government. It didn't mean public institutions like OHSU or Bay Area Hospital or any of our public district hospitals. Is that, I mean, I just want to be clear that we're expecting the legislature and policy groups to deal with this and not public entities like that.
In the floor debate, I made very clear that the public entities, this is not aimed at the public entities. They'll be major players, there's no question about that.
Absolutely.
But the obligation is on the state as a whole, and it's our job in the legislature to figure out how to do it.
Thank you very much, Representative. I appreciate that.
And I foresee it being like education. Currently, it's a state responsibility to provide a quality education model. I just chaired the committee that reviewed it again, and I would foresee healthcare being very similar in the way it's treated.
Thank you. One more quick question, if I may, Madam Chair. Thank you. Over in the House, we added the term cost-effective instead of just effective healthcare because, as you both alluded to, Oregon's done a really good job of figuring out what cost-effective healthcare looks like and prioritizing the services that are going to give us and all Oregonians who get these services the most positive effect for the money that we're spending. My personal vision for this bill is that that's what we would be doing here too. We would not be guaranteeing all services to all people because that's not the right way to deliver health care. I see this as more of the fundamental things analogous, if you will, not saying putting anything like definitely what it looked like, but analogous to the kinds of ways we structure providing services through the Oregon Health Plan. Prioritized lists, evidence-based work. Is that consistent with your belief as well?
That's absolutely. I see this as an aspirational goal that we move towards by dealing with how can we look at the 4 million people in the state of Oregon and deliver them a health care system that ends up not expanding the cost, but I think reducing the cost of health care. When we have a 4 million person risk pool and the ability to deal with health care innovations, I think it's... Madam Chair, if I could also just comment, this isn't only a policy issue. This is, for me, it's been a personal issue. In 2005, I went to a routine dental appointment that I wouldn't have gone to if I didn't have health insurance. And in that appointment, the dentist looked at my mouth and said, you know, I don't like the looks of that lump there. I think you ought to see an oral surgeon. So I went to see an oral surgeon. He looked at, he said, yeah, that looks kind of suspicious. You ought to go see an otolaryngologist. All things covered by my health insurance. I went to the otolaryngologist. He said, I think I'll take a biopsy of that thing and see what's going on. And after a biopsy and some scans and some PET scans, it became clear that I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and an odd version of it, mantle cell lymphoma, which, as I looked around the room talking to my doctors in a conference, it became clear to me that they thought I was entering the last year of life. We hear about that mythical last year of life and how much it costs. I started my last year of life in 2005. And was able, because of availability of experimental drugs that I could get with consultation in the medical school, started a pretty aggressive form of chemotherapy and behavioral therapy at the same time. All the while, as I was sitting for 5 hours a day over a period of about 6 months, once a week, I began to think about, what if I didn't have health insurance? If I didn't have health insurance, I would not have been in that dentist's office. I would not have gone through, I would not have found it until the clinical signs that come from lymphoma aromas. It said to me, we live in a very privileged place when we're making these decisions. It's easy to think of this as a conceptual idea that has its merit but is impractical. But the fact is, it's not impractical because 95% of it already have access to that kind of care. And as you get focused when you have chemo coming in your arm. And my focus is that I couldn't get away from the thought that, what if I didn't have health insurance? I would not be here before you today. I would be dead. And 12 years after that experience, I'm still here causing trouble. So this thing is very personal to me, very personal as well as public policy.
Thank you very much.
I've heard a criticism that this takes away individual responsibility for your own health, and nothing could be further from the truth. And those of you that know me know I've been a runner all my life, and I haven't smoked, and I've tried to take good care of myself. That's all of our responsibilities. But despite whatever we do, we can still get sick. And without health insurance, like the good representative here, we might not be in this room.
Thank you so much. With that, Martin Taylor, Lillian Nickerson, and Austin Putnam.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Martin Taylor, and I'm here representing the Oregon Nurses Association. And I want to start just by introducing the panel to you, because we have folks who haven't testified before. And I think Lily's going to start, and then I'll go, and then Austin will come third. So if you have any tough questions, though, direct them at me, not Lily or Austin.
Okay. Lily. Chairman Anderson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to offer testimony in support of HJR 203, the HOPE Amendment, on behalf of the Oregon Nurses Association. My name is Lillian Nickerson, and I am a registered nurse at OHSU, where I work in adult medicine, serving many patients who are on the Oregon Health Plan or subsidized health care, often with multiple chronic diagnoses generally associated with poverty. I support HJR 203 because every day in the hospital, I see firsthand that the foundation to building healthy communities is access to preventative care. In my work, I too often see life-altering complications from preventable diseases such as diabetes and heart disease because my patients were unable to access care soon enough, either from lack of health insurance or because services are prohibitively expensive. This late course treatment has disastrous effects on our community's overall health, with too many Oregonians experiencing premature death or utilizing the healthcare system in middle age at significantly higher rates and costs. The HOPE Amendment works to address these issues by ensuring that all Oregonians can access affordable health care. Oregonians have been clear. We hold a shared belief that all Oregonians deserve health care regardless of their situation or location. Oregon should insist that we are serving our residents with the highest quality care, including physical and mental health services. Having worked with children suffering from mental illness, I know that when access to mental health services are limited for these kids, their trauma is furthered and their prognoses become more dire. Early intervention in these cases goes hand in hand with preventing homelessness and combating our state's mental health and addiction crises. These children deserve a chance to be happy, healthy, productive members of our society, despite the price tag of a prescription or the availability of an appointment or procedure. I know that too many people and too many parents have to consider whether or not they can afford to get care even in crisis. As a nurse, I have good health insurance, and I still have that fear. That's unacceptable. HOPE affirms that in our state constitution, what Oregonians have said time and again, health care is a right, and it allows some of our brightest minds in health care to come together to find solutions so that 100% of Oregonians can access, afford, and utilize comprehensive health care. As a progressive, compassionate state, we should be working towards making people healthier. HOPE fortifies that value in Oregon, which is why I hope you'll support HJR 203.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. Questions?
Thank you, Chair Monis Anderson. Again, for the record, Martin Taylor. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Nurses Association. I moved into that role this last August. And I'm here representing 15,000 nurses. Most of them are in collective bargaining, but we also have about 1,500 nurses where we're their professional association, and they join the way they join the Oregon Medical Association or any other professional association. So if you're a patient of a nurse and they're working with you, they don't look and say, this person's right is greater than the person next to them because they can afford to pay me. Likewise, they don't look at you and say you have less right to health care because you can't afford to pay. When nurses say health care is a fundamental right, it's because in practice, nurses, like almost all health care providers, when they see you, they don't see an ability to pay. They don't see a transaction. They see someone who in that moment has a fundamental right to their care. It's unconditional. It's not conditional based on an ability to pay. In Oregon, we've done a great job in the last 8 years, 10 years, creating a system where 95% of people aren't in that situation. When they're there, they have the ability to pay either through their employer, through their own personal livelihood, through the marketplace, through the Oregon Health Plan. So this is a good time to have this conversation. Philosophically, the Nurses Association believes that healthcare is a fundamental right because it enables other fundamental rights that you can't enjoy without healthcare. The right to life, the right to dignity, the right to be able to pursue happiness by holding a job or staying healthy, being functional. Without healthcare being recognized as a fundamental right, other rights are compromised. There's also this very practical consideration, and a practical consideration about why to do this now. So as Mitch Greenlick, Representative Greenlick mentioned, this is an idea that's been around for a little while. When we were pursuing this in 2008, 1 in 5 Oregonians did not have access to health insurance. If hope had made it to the ballot and passed, that represented the possibility that you had been obligated, mandated, to put a bunch of state resources into getting that other 20% covered. That's not our situation today. Oregon has more people covered both by percentage and in raw numbers than any other time in our history. Right now, Oregonians do have access to cost-effective, medically appropriate, and affordable care. You're passing this measure not to create a new health system. You're passing this measure, and Oregonians can affirm this measure to say that we have a right to the health system that we've built. And the health system that you built is extraordinary. The last 10 years of work is a legacy in Oregon, and it's certainly a legacy that's attributed to great leaders. Many of them are here. I'm facing them. But there are also the Representative Greenlicks and the Senator Bates and the Senator Westlands and the John Kitzhoppers and the Ted Kulongoskis and the Tim Freemans, and that list goes on and on. And there are Democrats and there are Republicans. And all the stakeholders that spent countless hours advising and creating this policy, and the voters themselves when they voted in favor of ballot measure 101 at a 62% margin. This is Oregon's legacy. It's all of ours. We created one of the best healthcare systems in the country at a time when most Oregonians are covered. And now we need a backstop. Fundamentally, we should not go back to a time where 1 in 5 Oregonians had to worry about delaying healthcare and potentially, as Representative Greenlick described, putting their lives at risk. We should not go back to a time where you had to choose between your healthcare and paying rent or other utilities. We shouldn't go back to a time when Oregonians routinely faced bankruptcy to pay healthcare costs that were essential. We passed that time.
Can you just step back a little bit from
Sorry.
The mics are super sensitive.
Super sensitive mic. We've passed that time, and we should codify, we should give the voters of Oregon the opportunity to put in the Oregon Constitution, healthcare is a fundamental right, to support and back up the legacy we created, the work that we've done. And that's ONA's intention. If you put this on the ballot, it will be a fight that we take on in November, because we believe that most Oregonians see healthcare as a fundamental right, the same way a nurse sees that as your right, but also to protect all of the good work that's gone into the last 8 and 10 years for all of us. And finally, what you're really giving Oregonians is a choice that I want to make pretty personal to each of us. We can each ask this question at the ballot in November. Do I believe I have a right, a fundamental right, to health care? So whose decision is that? Is that the decision of legislators or courts? Ultimately, in Oregon, we have a process for putting ballot measures out to the voters so that that is actually a decision that each of you get to make. Do you believe you have a fundamental right to health care? And whose job is it to decide that? And in Oregon, that's the people's job. And we're giving this referral so that people can do their job and ask the question, is health care my fundamental right? So I hope very much that you pass this along.
Thank you.
Chair Moniz Anderson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Joint Resolution 203 to enshrine health care as a human right in the Oregon State Constitution. My name is Austin Putnam, and I'm able to access health care through publicly funded health insurance. On January 9th, 2009, my friend Lauren and I were walking down a sidewalk when two drunk drivers crashed into one another. The collision sent a speeding Volvo directly into my friend and I. My right leg was amputated instantly, and a fifth of my left thigh was degloved. I also suffered cranial damage. After my stay at the hospital, I was in bad shape financially. I applied for disability and was denied for 2 years. It wasn't until I obtained a lawyer that my case was approved. Now I depend on Medicare. My prosthetic leg costs thousands of dollars and needs replacing every 3 years. Without Medicare, my situation would be dire. Although my health care access may be relatively safe, too many people don't have that reassurance. In the face of significant turmoil when it comes to health care at the federal level, far too many people on the cusp of OHP eligibility are left wondering if they will still have health care this time next year. Too many people who buy private insurance through the marketplace are worried that their access will evaporate. And for too many, myself included, access to insurance does not necessarily equate to affordable health care that Oregonians can actually utilize. As a state, we now have the opportunity to take the first step in ensuring that 100% of Oregonians can meaningfully access care. Across the state, Oregonians have spoken loud and clear. We believe that health care is a fundamental right. It's time that our state constitution reflected that shared value. The HOPE Initiative makes Oregon's commitment to equitable health care crystal clear and offers an important platform for some of the best minds in healthcare, including providers, insurers, hospitals, patients, and consumer advocates, to come together to make sure Oregon is living up to our full potential, to give every Oregonian the opportunity to live a healthy and productive life. Oregon has been a pioneer in expanding innovative and effective care, and this is the next step. For Oregonians like me, HOPE is a reassurance that our ability to get the services and medication we need can't simply be cut off tomorrow, next week, or next year. It sends a message that our state truly cares about every single Oregonian. It's time to put a stop to the uncertainty around healthcare in Oregon. I urge your support for the HOPE Initiative. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much, and we'd like to call Bruce Thompson, Lee Mercer, and Chris Lowe. Oh, I forgot this. Please proceed.
Chair Moniz Anderson, members of the committee, I am Bruce Thompson, and I am a supporter of HJR 203. As a family physician and a county health officer, I've also become an advocate for those among us who lack access to health care. You know, we all have a shared common health care risk. It's called chance. It's that unexpected, unbudgeted for medical need or an emergency. I'll tell you my family story with chance. 16 years ago, on a family excursion on a wilderness river in Idaho, our 16-year-old son suffered a severe life-threatening accident. Feeling complete despair and sheer horror at that moment, rattled the very core of my soul and my spirit. I was adrift in an angry sea of helplessness, helpless to provide for my son's medical needs. Thank you. More and more, all of us are becoming aware of this sense of helplessness in our society. Too many of our neighbors, our family, our friends, have had to choose between healthcare costs and other essentials. Oregon voters deserve the opportunity to affirm what they have been increasingly telling us over the last several years. The passage of Measure 101 and the passage of several city and county resolutions are signals that Oregonians share the value that everyone have access to health care. If approved by the voters, the HOPE Amendment will amend our Constitution with this shared value, that access to affordable, cost-effective health care is a fundamental right. You know, sooner or later, some state's going to do this. I hope you help us be the first one. Thank you for this opportunity, and I'll answer any questions if you have any.
Let's go through the panel first. Thank you.
Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair DeBoer, and committee. For the record, my name is Lee Mercer. I am a resident of Silverton, a retired business owner, and a board member of Healthcare for All Oregon, a statewide healthcare advocacy organization with over 100 member organizations and chapters and 28,500 supporters in our database. Healthcare for All Oregon supports the passage of HJR 203, the HOPE Initiative, which will give Oregon voters the opportunity to express themselves on an amendment to the Oregon Constitution declaring health care to be a fundamental right. Fundamentally, what is enshrined in a constitution should be the values and rights that we agree upon as a society. If our values tell us that health care is a human right, and we believe it is a value we need to strive to manifest in our state, shouldn't we put it in the Oregon Constitution? Oregonians have been clear that health care is non-negotiable. Our Constitution should reflect that. When the Founding Fathers wrote the U.S. Constitution, had they determined every detail of implementing the rights enshrined in that document? When they said, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity," had they calculated all the revenue formulas for paying to establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty? I don't think so. So as Oregonians, we should view HJR 203, the HOPE Initiative, as a value statement that we believe everyone in our state should have affordable access to health care, and that, by voting for this measure, we are putting a stake in the ground saying that is where we want to go. And if we work together, having set this as our goal, we can make it happen. So again, we urge you to pass HJR 203, the HOPE Initiative, and allow the voters of Oregon to express their support for health care as a fundamental right.
Thank you.
Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair DeBoer, and committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I am also supporting HJR 203 and asking you to pass it out favorably with a due pass recommendation. My name is Christopher Lowe. I live in Portland. I'm the holder of a PhD in history from Yale University, and I've also studied epidemiology and biostatistics pretty extensively at OHSU. And I've been a healthcare advocate for about 10 years or 11 years. A lot of my time has gone into it. I've advocated for universal publicly funded health care with Healthcare for All Oregon and Portland Jobs with Justice and predecessor organizations. I'm also on the board of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and advocated for environmental health and social equity in healthcare. I've supported many of the measures you have worked on over the years to improve the health system in Oregon. I could do chapter and verse with you about the dysfunctions of our current health system. You know, I can go through fragmentation, emphasis of treatment over prevention or incentivizing of that, opaque costs and prices, narrow networks, adverse selection, you know, the overall the patterns that give the United States our situation where we pay nearly twice as much as any other country on either per capita or share of GDP kind of basis, and get significantly worse health outcomes as a result. I won't do that because you know that at least as well as I do. You live with this stuff. When I started as an activist, my motivations had a moral basis and an intellectual one. I was kind of morally offended by the unfairness of the system, which left people out and put the worst burdens of the dysfunctions of the system on the people least able to bear them in society. And I was morally offended by the wastefulness of the system, that we should spend so much and get relatively so little out of it. And then intellectually, just the irrationality of it kind of offended me. But the more I've worked as an activist and as a health scholar and looked into these things, the more I've actually ended up focusing on, in my motivations, on what we would, you know, I was taught to call in at OHSU morbidity, on not just the raised death rates, but the burdens of pain and the burdens of fear that the dysfunctions of our current health system impose on many, many people at many different levels. People, one of our greatest problems is people deferring care, necessary care, because they can't afford it. And that happens with people who don't have insurance, but increasingly it's happening with people who do have insurance, because in the sort of struggle to keep premium prices down, the current system shifts costs by raising deductibles, raising coinsurance. So it's still, you know, having just nominal insurance doesn't necessarily mean you have access to care. That avoidance ends up having people come in for more expensive, less effective treatments at later stages of a disease process or, you know, in response to injuries that leave people less functional in their lives as well, that in ways that impose further cost and emotional burdens on the society. You know, one of my nurse friends, you know, talks about how he got motivated by being a trauma nurse and doing diabetic amputations on people who could have avoided that. Beyond that, there's a burden of fear. We hear often people talking about, people are actually afraid to go to the doctor because they might find something bad out and they don't know how they're going to pay for it. People will sometimes avoid care because they don't want to impose that kind of burden on their families. People, at the same time, there's fear just in general about what happens if I lose my health insurance. I've been through that. I lost insurance in the Great Recession myself. When the Medicaid expansion came through, I benefited from that. My financial circumstances have changed. I've now experiencing complications around what they call churn at the borderline of income. So people stay in jobs that they don't like because they're afraid to lose their insurance. Families are become afraid if family members become ill or injured. There's a huge emotional burdens that we impose on people when someone is sick or injured, because their family members aren't able to just sort of focus on helping a family member get better. They have to worry about how am I going to pay for this. So when you look around the world, other countries don't have this kind of situation. And basically, they don't all do it the same way. I have my particular views about how we would get to it, but what we need to do, what they all have in common is a universal risk pool and no competition for benefits. And those are the two things. You can get to that many different ways. You could be public, it could be private, it could be mixed. Look around the world, there are lots of different kinds of systems that do it. But those are the two kinds of things. Now, to me, what's important about HJR 203 is what's the moment at which it's coming. Okay, right now, we're in a moment in healthcare in the United States where the crisis of our health system has not been fixed by the ACA. Many people have been helped by it, but there's still, you know, all the political conflict over it. There's ways it doesn't work. And meanwhile, even in the employment-based sector, you look at the Kaiser Family Foundation reports on high deductible insurance plans, and nearly 50% of American workers in their most recent survey are in plans that they call high deductible plans. So the dysfunctions of the system are not ending. We need to do something different about it. We'll be back here again if we don't. Now, what HJR 203 represents to me is not any particular plan, but it represents a piece of how do we form the political will to take on this complex subject. Chair Greenlick referred to the work group that he's formed in the House, and it's a very serious work group. And this is the thing that's encouraging to me, the thing that gives me hope, is the idea that we're not going to use complexity as an excuse not to act. We're going to use complexity as a challenge that we have to solve. So I urge, and I do think as well, that the public is behind this. I think that the outcome of Measure 101 was really indicative, because it, as OPB pointed out, if you take the three metro counties around Portland out of the vote, Measure 101 won in the rest of the state. This is not just a Portland liberal issue, it's a statewide issue for Oregonians. So I urge you to pass this out with a yes vote and a do pass recommendation in order to give the voters of Oregon the opportunity to express that political will and help legislators focus on solving the problems we need to solve. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? All right. Tony Germain, and is it Mart or Matt Thompson?
What happened to your 2 minutes?
Okay, yeah. remember, we have now, although we're doing fine, it looks like we'll be able to have everybody testify. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair, members of the committee. And I'm here to testify in support of House Joint Resolution 203 today. My name is Tony German, and I'm a resident of Silverton, Oregon, where I practice as a rural family medicine doctor. In addition to my role of delivering day-to-day care, I'm a clinic director at Primary Care Community Health Center in Woodburn, Oregon, where we help over 15,000 community members. I'd like to start my comments today by asking a question I asked similarly at the prior committee meeting on this joint resolution, with the understanding that several of the members up here have been in healthcare. But I'd like to ask each and every one of you is, what is the worst news you've ever had to deliver to somebody? And I'd like us to look back at our own family and friends, and have they ever shared a recent distressing diagnosis? Most likely, by mere statistics, you yourselves have experienced challenges in your own health. Now I would like us to imagine ourselves in a room, sitting 3 feet in front of a fellow Oregonian, and you just inform them that they have a new diagnosis of high blood pressure, diabetes, or worse yet, cancer. Imagine the fear you might have as that patient. Now I want us to imagine looking them in the eye and say, sorry. Sorry, I can't treat you appropriately. Yes, we have the therapies to make your diabetes better, but since you don't have affordable access to health care, your risk for kidney failure and loss of vision, among other complications, is going to skyrocket. Sorry you can't afford your medications. Sorry you will have a higher risk for heart attack and heart failure, because one of the simplest interventions to treat this is a pill that costs $5, but you can't get access to even get that prescription.
Sorry the genetics roulette ball fell, unfortunately, on your number. Sorry that rising health care costs and market failures have priced you out of your ability to afford health care to treat you appropriately. This lack of basic health care has consequences. It sanctions suffering, promotes poor performance in school, and discourages the ability to be part of a healthy workforce. I believe we have far too many bright individuals in health policy in multiple ways to get to universal access. We need to say yes to the HOPE Amendment. Oregon is a pioneer. We created the Oregon Health Plan. And during my time in practice, I've seen our increase in access to care through the ACA and the OHP expansion, and I promise you it has changed lives and health outcomes. This is illustrated by my patient, Mr. W., who now has controlled chronic obstructive pulmonary disease simply because I can offer him standard of care inhalers. Prior to this, he was in the emergency department on a regular basis. Many of my diabetics without basic access to care lack control of their condition. Now we can prevent their complications with it. And in my opinion, insulin is a great deal cheaper and respectful way to treat a human being rather than offering them dialysis later. Preventive medicine only works if you can get access to it. Thanks to OHP expansion, Mrs. P's precancerous lesion on her cervical pap smear was caught rather than the fate of chemotherapy. In my view, and this has been said today, everybody has a pre-existing condition. I believe it's chance, and we are all going to get sick and injured. The HOPE Initiative lifts our communities up and enshrines in our state constitution that health care is fundamental to what we believe in as a community and as a state. The HOPE Amendment enables Oregon to continue to be a model for the rest of the nation, and I think we should rise to this opportunity. Providing individuals access to affordable health care is the right thing to do, both from a financial decision and from an ethical standpoint. And to my core, deep down, I believe firmly that as an average citizen and as a doctor in this community, that we need to do this. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Chairmonas Anderson and members of the committee, my name is Mark Thompson, and as a small business owner in Beaverton, it's I appreciate this opportunity to speak in support of HJR 203 from a small business and an economics perspective. I founded my company, Forefront Economics, 25 years ago to provide economic analysis to the energy industry. After 25 years of navigating the market for health care insurance, I've become convinced that recognizing the fundamental importance of access to affordable health care for all Oregonians is critical to the economic health and prosperity of our state. It's important for small businesses to be shielded from the vagaries of the cost imposed by the uninsured. Our cost of health care, health insurance, has surged faster than any other cost in our budget. A stable market where health care costs are rising at predictable and reasonable rates is important for a positive economic environment. This is one reason I urge your support for HJR 203. I'd also like to address the importance of HJR 203 would have on the entrepreneurial spirit of our great state. Before I decided to leave a well-paying job with excellent benefits, I wrestled long and hard with exposing my wife and two young children to the risk of an uncertain and expensive health care future. On a star-filled night in eastern Oregon, after backpacking in the Wallawas, and with my wife's support, I finally decided to take that risk. Today, I can't help but wonder how many small business entrepreneurs, how many young people with good ideas are held back by the extreme risk associated with health care. By lowering risk, I am convinced that the HOPE Amendment would contribute to a better entrepreneurial and overall business environment in our great state. The HOPE Initiative guarantees that Oregon continues moving forward toward a vision where health care no longer depends on your wealth or who you happen to work for at the time, and where health care costs aren't shifted onto the backs of small business or individuals just struggling to get by. It's time we continue to advance and expand health care, not go back, which is why I urge your support for HJR 203. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. And now Mike Sullivan, Steve, is it Michigan or Milligan, and Fernando Gapson.
Good afternoon, Chair Mons Anderson and committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am the political director in Oregon for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. commonly known as AWPPW. AWPPW supports HJR 203. We're all in on this, and I'll explain why. I also represent AWPPW on the Union Caucus, part of Healthcare for All Oregon, and I serve on the National Labor Committee for Single Payer. I want to give a quick short story of the single payer national health care plan that's gone on for a long time. In 1945, Harry Truman tried to put in a national health care plan, but he got rebuff from the Congress, and it never happened until 1965, when LBJ finally got Medicare through. Another rebuff came from the United Auto Workers' esteemed president, Walter Reuther, who beseeched his membership to go to this direction of a national health care plan. But, you know, they were fat cats. The IOW, like a lot of industrial unions, they had their health care and didn't heed the need. In 1996, and I was fortunate to be there at the founding convention of the Labor Party, one of their 16 points was health care for all Oregon. Disposable income is what you have left after you've clothed yourself, housed yourself, and fed yourself. And you couple that with healthcare has gone outpaced wages 3-1. If you could cut healthcare costs, it would allow citizens to put more money back into the local community. And according to Political Fact, Harvard University paper reports that the cost of endless war of 17 years in Iraq and Afghanistan has cost anywhere between $4 to $6 trillion. That includes an estimated future payment of $1 trillion through 2083 for veterans' disability benefits, as well as interest borrowing for the war effort. I think we can do better off in this country rather than have that kind of money put into endless war and put in the national health care system. Perhaps using diplomacy would be a better way. Lastly, having health care through your employer comes at a cost if you lose your job. AWPPW has experienced a great loss of jobs due to plant closures. These members of ours did nothing wrong at all, but now they don't have health care. This isn't right. This is why healthcare is a human right. Everyone should be in, no one should be left out. Certainly we can do better for our citizens. And I thank you for the time you've allowed me today, Chair, committee members.
Thank you.
I'll answer any questions you may have.
Go through the panel first.
Good afternoon, Chair Anderson and committee members. I'm Steve Milligan. And I want to put a face on someone who's had to file bankruptcy for medical bills. I was fortunate enough to actually have access to health care because the morning I called 911, the ambulance got there, picked me up, brought me to Salem Hospital, and they just started working. They didn't say, do you have insurance or not? 13 days later, $50,000 deeper in debt because I was one of those uninsured in 2009. I was getting collection calls from the providers. And they were like, well, why don't you just pay us $100 a month? And I said, you and the eight others, how do I pay that a month? You know, and so I had to file for bankruptcy. Right now I'm with the Affordable Care Act, and because of my age and because of how I've had to keep my expenses down or my income down so that I can qualify for some my Social Security, I pay about $3 a month for my health care insurance, but it's subsidized of over $600 a month from the federal government. And it's one where I have a $6,500 deductible. So until I pay $6,500, which is almost half of my take-home pay outside of my Social Security, how do I, it's like I'm lost. I can't, now I have insurance, but I don't have access because I can't afford to pay because I'm with the Kaiser plan. Maybe someone can help me out that's behind me. Is that they completely changed everything to like do away with deductibles. So now I've just got to go in and pay 100% of what I want to get done without that. And it's like we're creating, not we the state, but through healthcare plans, we're creating an unfair playing field for people. And I'd like to say that I'm not part of the lower income. I've had to create myself to be part of the lower income so that some things are affordable for me. I'm also the mayor of Monmouth. And it's like, there's people look at me like, so you're the mayor, so everything must be going great for you. I'm like, no, I'm an elected official, but not everything's great. And sometimes we look at people in our community, and that's kind of why I'm here, is people in our community are suffering, and we don't know it, and we're not helping them. And so as an elected official to other elected officials, I encourage you to move this forward so that we can help raise the boat for all Oregonians for health care, because they need it. We need it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for allowing us to speak. My name is Fernando Gapacin. I'm a bus driver. And I just want to say that I wanted to address how something that Chris Lowe said, which is the changing conditions and your life situation changes. But more than anything else, my support of HJR 203 has to do with humanness, compassion. And I thought of it, I had a good union job maybe 5 years ago, and I had a massive heart attack, and they had to do emergency open heart surgery, save my life. And believe it or not, when the representative also mentioned, the first thing I thought of was, holy cow, there's 50,000 people who drop dead because they don't have health care. I mean, it's funny how you think of those things, you know, coming out of a life and death situation, but I thought of it. And I think at that time I committed myself to the notion that everybody should have health care. So anyway, I had good insurance and paid for it, and I didn't really feel the impact. Throughout my life, my father had a working class job, and he provided all of us with health care, and it didn't seem to be much of a stress back then. And it seemed almost, at least for folks who had regular jobs, that it was sort of acceptable that you had health care and you didn't have to choose between paying your rent or paying for health care. Well, my situation doesn't seem like it's as bad as Steve's, but after I retired, I got another job driving a bus, and I had another health plan from the OEBB. And it was one of those high deductible plans that Chris mentioned. And so I had a stroke last year, and they say I made a miracle recovery, and I feel good about that. But I got inundated with 27 different providers saying, you owe us this, you owe us that, and I couldn't tell initially from what was covered and what wasn't. And unfortunately for me, I got my plan before the high deductible was paid. And so the bottom line is, you know, working a low-income job and having this high deductible health plan, I ended up almost $10,000 in debt and people suing me to get their money. And you know, between my wife and I, we tried to pay off the stuff the best we can. We're paying through the nose in order to pay off these health bills. But bottom line is, I recovered, and now we're debtors. So I definitely would support the idea of the compassion that HJR 203 seems to represent, and perhaps for a better future for health care and for the people of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Yeah, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. You know, Walter Reuther did a lot of great things for the American auto workers. That wasn't one of them when he did that. And the effect of that almost put those workers out of business. In fact, did put many of them out of business as the auto companies were non-competitive with the foreign companies because the foreigners weren't paying for health insurance. And I think the number is almost $1,500 a car in health insurance for the auto workers. So that, I mean, there's a lot of money there that maybe could be redirected and give us a better thing. And the other thing I would say to the mayor and this gentleman is that your comment about paying a lot of money for insurance but can't use it because of that is probably one of the most frequent thing I hear from my constituents. And it's wrong.
Okay. Can I? Chair Mons-Anderson and Senator Beyer, I would take a different approach on Walter Reuther. I would say that he was way ahead of us, and we got to catch up.
Thank you very much. All right. Tom Sinek, Mark Callahan, and William Dalton. And we're doing great on time.
Chair Mons-Anderson, Vice Chair DeBoer, and members of the committee, I am pleased to be able to speak before you today in support of HJR Resolution 203. My name is Tom Sinsick. I'm a family nurse practitioner. I have been fighting barriers to access to care for nearly 40 years as a nurse in rural East Tennessee. I work for a tribe in Michigan. But I also worked in the jail here in Multnomah County, where access to care was easy. People had a right to care in the jail, but not in the community. I worked in school health centers. People that came in could have access to care, but we've heard about, what about if their insurance doesn't cover the specialist, the delays of care, and my time wasted as a clinician? That hasn't been mentioned yet. The wasted time of providers that has to spend so many hours, probably a third of the time in the day, just dealing with paperwork and the complexities of this system. But I want to focus today on aspiration, inspiration, and hope. A constitutional amendment is supposed to be aspirational. And I want to point to three documents, the U.S. Constitution, the Oregon Constitution, and a U.N. resolution. The United States Constitution was established to promote the general welfare and secure the blessings of liberty and to ourselves and our posterity. Section 1 of the Oregon Constitution relates to the natural inherent rights of the people and says that all free governments are instituted for the people's peace, safety, and happiness. And third, in 2012, the United Nations passed a resolution of which the United States is a signator, that says the right of every human being to the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of physical and mental health and medical care. Our government is a signatory to that. We don't have that as a human right. It is clear that the current system of providing care does not recognize health care access as a right. Because the fundamental right of access to care, as proposed in HJR 203, is not clearly recognized as a part of the general welfare, the blessings of liberty, or the safety and happiness of Oregonians, many people suffer, die because of delayed or denial of care. Furthermore, many suffer significant stress, as been mentioned earlier, and or financial ruin has been mentioned, eroding the general welfare, liberty, and happiness. Giving Oregonians an opportunity to decide to amend the Constitution to say that access to health care is a fundamental right, it's an inherent right, as we speak in the Oregon Constitution already, is in order to address the peace, safety, and happiness of Oregonians as called for in this Constitution is the thing that the legislature should do. Healthcare for All Oregon calls on the Senate Committee on Healthcare to vote through HJR 203, the HOPE Amendment, and take that vote onto the Senate and let the people of Oregon finally decide whether this should be a fundamental right enshrined in our Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm Dr. William Dalton, a psychologist, live here in Salem, Oregon, have been involved for the past 40 years in public health, mental health provision, and I, like a number of the other people that have spoken with you today, I'm here today because I was fortunate enough to have accessible and affordable health care. And so I've lived on both sides of the issue in terms of advocating and helping to provide mental health, public health care for citizens. I have seen people die for the lack of accessible and affordable health care. And I'm happy to have been involved in a large number of programs that have saved lives and enabled people to continue to be a part of successfully being members of their community. I'm very proud of Oregon, very proud of this committee for taking the time, effort, energy to hear this resolution. And I can't too deeply express my passion and my support for what hopefully we're about to do. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of this committee. My name is Mark Callahan. I'm a congressional candidate in Oregon's 5th District and live in Oregon City, Oregon. I'm here today to speak against HJR 203. Healthcare is not a right. This resolution puts forward the misguided liberal idea that healthcare is somehow a right and the state of Oregon is somehow going to have to pay for to guarantee that right in the future. The state of Oregon pays for things by increasing taxes. Haven't we as a state wasted enough money, i.e. $300 million plus on a website, to basically be burdened with more cost? If healthcare becomes a right, the same liberal legislators that support this will raise taxes to guarantee this right. The people of Oregon will lose financially. The only ones that will win are the liberal legislators that are bought with campaign donations by big insurance companies and the big insurance companies themselves that give business from the state of Oregon guaranteeing a right. Our health insurance costs have already increased many times over during the past 8 years via the care plan that bears the previous president's name prior to President Trump being elected. Increased health care costs will increase the size of government, causing less personal and financial freedom. My concern is that this will attract other people from other states. Are the people already here illegally going to be included in this health care plan? How do we fund this if we have another recession here in Oregon? The state of Oregon is not the mother or the father of Oregon citizens. Aiming to provide health care assurance as single pay is not the same as health care. Even though there is a need for health care, it doesn't mean it needs to be a constitutional right. Please vote no on HJR 203. Thank you.
Questions for the panel? Thank you very much. And I only have two more on the list, B.J. Kavanaugh and Dan Klosterman.
Chairman Lana Sanderson, committee. My name is Don Klosterman. I'm from Wilsonville. As I was trying to frame this issue, I came up with the idea, the word share. And as I looked at my grandchildren, and five of them, youngest ones are boys, they don't have an idea about sharing at age 3, 4, and 5, and they have to have adults help them with that. They like to have a lot, and they don't care to share. Unfortunately, I think that stays with us throughout our lifetime. And you can see that as we are adults, and so we have to ask our question is, who helps us share? Who helps me, keeps me accountable for that? Because I don't know that I have the ability, and I don't know that anyone else has the ability to overcome the marketing that says you ought to have more, and that you ought to have it all yourself in this individualistic world. So in a sense, who's the parent that helps us share, in a sense? Who's the adult? And it seems to me that it's the legislature to help us learn how and help us share with everyone else in Oregon. You look at it and you'll see other people saying, oh, gee, taxes are a burden. And that's part of the sophistication that's used to not want to share. We just change our words. The kids say, I know, I'm not sharing. We just change the words. And so if you look at taxes, that's one of the ways that we get to share. Now, it's kind of forced, maybe, but we get to share that way. If we have a little income and we have income taxes, if we have to pay taxes, that means we were blessed with income. If we have a lot of income, that means we were, our taxes, we were blessed with a lot of income. That's a wonderful thing. And so we get the, you help us get the joy of sharing. And so I ask you to do not be afraid to do taxes. Then the question is, well, what about who's going to kind of keep you guys accountable? And it seems to me there's two. One, we as voters either vote you in or vote you out. The other is the Constitution. Now, do you need to be held accountable? As we look at this world, we see at the internet, at the national level, there are people who do not want to share. If you look at this, the state legislature here, we have three legislators who are trying not to share, not to have us share health care with other people. So do you need this in the Constitution? I hate to have things in the Constitution, shouldn't be there. But do we need this in the Constitution to help you? And I think the answer is yes. So for me, will you please help us share by putting this in the Constitution?
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is B.J. Kavanaugh. I serve as the executive director, the founding executive director of 1-in-4 Chronic Health. We are a healthcare advocacy organization working on behalf of patients living with chronic health conditions. I'm here to offer our support, our very proud support for H.J.R. 203, the Hope Amendment. I have submitted written testimony further outlining some of the concerns that we have. I was greatly impressed by Representative Greenlick's own story, and so I'd like to tell you a little one of my own. My last year began in 1996. That was the year in which I had received a diagnosis for HIV. At that point, the idea that we could treat with highly active antiretroviral cocktails or drugs was a very new idea, and even at that point, I was told by my provider, my doctor, that I had approximately 7 years to live if I was lucky. I began fighting, before then for healthcare advocacy as an activist working with ACT UP in New York in the 1980s. We saw what was happening to people that didn't have access to medication or even the most basic dignity in human care. We saw patients who would be left alone in hospital rooms because nurses wouldn't want to go in there and doctors would only go in there in full biohazard suits. So, to make a long story short, I'm here because of the incredible programs that were done in research and in the ability to help patients pay for their share of cost for HIV medications, which average about $30,000 a year still today. I'm a beneficiary of that. There are other federal programs which help specific individuals. The time is now for all of us to be able to benefit from this care. I look at this as just being as simple an idea as the fact that we all benefit from fire protection, from police departments. On the larger level, we benefit from the military. The time is now to look at this and to be able to provide care for all people in Oregon. I do want to say that I have some concerns around what we're considering to be cost-effective care and who gets access to that care. There have been situations of late where people who were requiring care that was clinically required hadn't gotten it as soon as possible, and that did have to ruffle a bit feathers and go through that. But I think that if we move forward in the spirit of community and in the spirit of doing good intention, we can find a way to provide care for people without busting our budgets, and more importantly, just having a positive outcome. You know, in our instance alone, we provide services for people with chronic health conditions. If we can prevent diabetes, if we can prevent heart disease, If we can prevent cancer, if we have the ability that people no longer have to fear the cost of treatment and care to be able to do these things, not only does that save our bottom line, but that makes all of us a much better place. And that makes Oregon truly even more special. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for this panel? All right. That's all that we have on our list. And I want to carry over this work session to Monday, February 26th at 1 p.m. And I do want to just put some things on the record. In the House Joint Resolution, basically, what we are looking at is it is the obligation of the state to ensure that every resident of Oregon has access to cost-effective, medically appropriate, and affordable health care as a fundamental right. And just also to put on the record that Representative Greenock did ask for an opinion from Legislative Council to see if there would be any financial liability for the state. And I want to put on the record, this is on OLIS if you want to have a copy of this, but the proposed amendment does not specify how the state must ensure that every resident of Oregon has access to health care. Therefore, right now, it is impossible to say whether the amendment would create a financial liability for the state. This amendment does not require the state to provide health care to every resident, only provide access. So one could imagine the mechanisms that we the state have to come up with. We could develop a mechanism that would have a minimal financial impact on the state, as well as we could develop a mechanism that would have enormous financial consequence of the state. So I just want to get that on the record. We are looking at wording. Not sure if there's going to be any changes or not, but we are working with Representative Greenock. But I needed to get that on the record because I know the League of Women Voters is opposed to the bill because of the financial component, and this is what we need to be very careful about, the wording of this amendment, because I think we, the state, can come up with mechanisms to pay for health care for all, which I fundamentally think is the moral right thing to do. Are there other comments? Yeah, Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I agree with everybody that spoke for the bill. We have a fundamental right to health care, and I'm a strong supporter of Medicare for all. I'm concerned that as a state, we cannot afford it. The federal government subsidizes us and actually provides our health care dollars to a great extent. So without them, to send this to the voters and ask the voters for their approval, once they approve it, then it comes to us to figure out how to fund it. And I do not agree with the Legislative Council. I do want a fiscal impact on this because I think it will break the state. And I've said that over and over. So how do we actually implement it? And what do we take away? Do we take away education? Do we raise our taxes by billions of dollars? And our health system is entirely broken, both from prescriptions and drugs and to providing. So this is a huge thing. I don't know if a constitutional amendment is the right way to do it because it does create a problem for us. Who moves here and who becomes a citizen? If you have a child somewhere else that needs medical care, do you come to Oregon? And how do we as citizens pay for it? We need to fix this system. OHA and DHS, I firmly support the two new directors and fixing some of the problems in those organizations. So I agree with it all. I do think that from the federal government within 4 to 5 years that Medicare for All will be a base plan. And I am reading a book that somebody just brought me on all the other states or countries that have this. And for what we spend on medical care as opposed to the rest of the world is absolutely crazy. So I don't know if I support sending this to the voters because if the voters approve it, I don't know how we pay for it. And we have a limited amount of dollars. Community health centers are wonderful things. Hospitals can take anybody in and can't charge it below certain income levels. So it's going to be a difficult decision, but I don't think the answer is to put it in a constitutional amendment. And I'll look forward to next week to how we try to fix this bill. But I do want to state that I do want a fiscal impact from the state, and it's required on a bill.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate Senator DeBoer's concerns, and I, to some extent, share them, although I'm obviously still interested in sending this forward. I would say this, Senator. Yes, we get a lot of help from the federal government, but a lot of states have gotten waivers so that they can actually bring the Medicare dollars in state and can use those dollars to create a comprehensive health system that is based on a premise that the state thinks will provide optimal health care for a lot of people. I want to be clear, I'm not advocating for single payer as part of this. I'm not advocating for the state to take over everything. I do think that we have a lot of money, as you quite rightly said, awash in the system. And if we pooled it and spent less money on administration, more money on group purchasing of pharmaceuticals, all sorts of things like that, I think employers would be paying their fair share. Workers would have insurance that they pay for and can use, as several of our people brought up. And there's a way to ensure health care throughout the lifespan in a cost-effective, evidence-based way. Yes, it's going to take a lot of hard work on our behalf, but I'm not at all convinced the state's going to need to spend any money, more money than it already does, and it may, in fact, need to spend less if we can make sure that all of our care is coordinated through the state. If every Oregonian, for example, got care through a CCO, our health care costs would be dramatically lower in the state.
Other comments? All right, colleagues, we do have some house bills, I believe, probably up on our agenda for Wednesday. So, and we are carrying HJR 203 to Monday, the 26th. So if there's no other comment, we're adjourned.